Hello, welcome to Spiritual Chillpill. My name is Maria. For those who are new to this podcast, this is a podcast about different spirituality techniques, different spiritual journeys, which is something that we're going to talk about today. We have a very special guest. And yeah, it's mostly, I think the podcast so far has become kind of a journaling process of my own healing journey and my previous co-host, Kimberly. So yeah, today we have a very, very special guest. Her name is Ruba Shalabi. And she, let's see if I explain this correctly. She is a food addiction counselor, but she went through her own journey herself after having a food addiction for many, many years. And she discovered that it was more of a spiritual journey of like changing her beliefs and changing the way we think around food rather than just going on diets or just doing more exercise, which is the advice that we get normally from the internet. So she went through this journey and she recovered from this addiction, and she left a career of 20 years to help others and yeah, become a coach in this field. And she also has a book, which I will let her explain more about it. But yes, I will let you introduce yourself, Ruba. I think your story is super interesting.
Thank you so much, Maria. Yeah, so I'm Ruba, and I'm the author of Beyond the Emptiness, How I Found Fullness Outside of Food. So this is a book I wrote after my awakening, after my transformation, because I really wanted to share. So as you said, I'm a food addiction counselor, and I'm also a breath worker, a biodynamic breath work and trauma release practitioner. So yeah, I'm so excited about the podcast today. And as you said, there are so many roads that lead to Rome when it comes to spirituality, and there are abundance of modalities out there, and it's always nice to hear about what was the unique path of everyone. So I'm delighted today to share my path.
No, it's super interesting. So tell us what food addiction is like. When did that click for you that okay, this is not just going on a diet? What happened? What was the journey? What was the start of this journey?
Yeah, so the thing is, I was an overeater from a very, very young age. And my mother, like any loving mother, tried as much as she could to control my food intake, and she did not succeed. It made it much worse, like the story of any overeater and the approaches that their parents, their caregivers, society approaches in terms of overeating and believing that, yeah, as if there's a switch and there's a will. And if you have a strong will, you can stop overeating. And if you cannot stop overeating, you're broken, you're damaged goods. There's something wrong in you. And many overeaters face the same things with their parents and their friends, comparing them to others and say, oh, you're very smart, you're very funny, you're very nice, but how come you're still gaining weight? How come you can't really control your food? And yeah, it's much more complex than just doing a diet and exercising, because I did so many diets. I tried to control my food intakes throughout my life. But yeah, eventually it would go like, I wouldn't just gain what I lost, I would gain much more because my hunger became much bigger. And I only came across the concept of food addiction counseling by coincidence. And this is the thing, because I am of the belief that whenever we're ready to take care of ourselves, somebody is going to mention something, and it's going to inspire us. It's most of the times it's by pure coincidence. It could be someone, a friend we haven't seen in a long time, or we come across, we're in a gathering and somebody opens a conversation about someone they knew. So I wouldn't really worry a lot about how am I supposed to do to get healed, and just trust the process that if I believe that I want to love myself more and I want to take care of myself, the path to healing is going to come to me, and I don't need to worry about that. Yeah. And in my case, what had happened is I was an overeater, of course. I had a history of overeating. And I was in my early 40s, actually late 30s, I think 39 or something, kind of getting into this midlife crisis of an unmarried woman with no kids that was a workaholic, which is very typical in Dubai. You have all of those very successful women.
Oh my God,
And
yes.
we poured all of, I was living in Dubai at that time. I had poured all of my energy in my career. And I was at that time a vice president of an international corporation, thinking that if I reach the peak of my career, this is where happiness is going to be.
Yeah.
And I kind of found myself like, I'm miserable. I am so lonely. The peak of success is a very, very lonely place because I was traveling constantly. So everybody assumed I was on a plane or not around. And I had gained so much weight. Food was my solace. We were under a lot of pressure at work. We were going under a lot of reorganizations and stuff. And I was totally disillusioned by work. I felt like I had poured myself into the superwoman, and the superwoman was miserable and unhappy. So what is success really? And
Yeah.
it was a kind of okay, what am I supposed to do? And this is where my spiritual journey started because I wanted to look for answers. And at that time, a colleague of mine who was also a very close friend, and he was seeing that I was kind of falling apart. And I mean, I was sharing to him, I'm like, I'm totally disillusioned. There was a lot of reorganizations happening in the organization where I was working. I felt like I was replaceable, that I was unappreciated, I was taken advantage of, which is kind of, you kind of, in any setting, we can kind of decide, do we want to play the role of the victim? Or do we want to
Yes.
take it as an opportunity to do something about our lives? Because
Yes.
as a workaholic and as an overachiever and as an overeater, my survival mechanism from childhood was to push, to push, to force things into a certain direction.
Yes.
And feeling like, yeah, I can do it. I develop a mental, a framework of what success is. And it's very much this energy of doing, this masculine energy of achieving, of getting to
Yeah.
a goal. And for me, the fuel of that was overeating.
Yeah.
Everything was in control in my life except my eating.
But almost like
And
you felt control. You felt like that was your choice, right?
yeah, it
Almost,
was my
yeah.
choice. Yeah, I
Like,
mean, the thing is, no, at that time I was confused. I was confused
okay.
because I was like, okay, I made certain choices throughout my life, and this is where they led me. No, in a way, I felt like I never felt, I mean, in a way, I identified so much with my career that everything else was secondary. Like
Yeah.
my body did not exist. It's like my body is just there to serve my means of achieving a goal.
Yes.
And my womanhood was also kind of very switched off because you know what the dating scene is in Dubai.
Oh,
Everybody
yeah.
is so workaholic and everything is so transactional. And I felt like a failure. I couldn't get into a relationship. And so when you struggle in relationship, you just pour yourself into work even further. And it's like kind of this is the thing I'm doing. Let me use work as an escape for everything else. So it's kind of you think oh, you're very successful, but also workaholism is a survival mechanism, an escape route from the other pains in life. And in my case, for others, every one of us has a refuge. A refuge is kind of a safe place where we go to resource ourselves. And for me, my refuge was food. Food and work.
Yeah,
It's like
food and
food
work.
and work. And they kind of support each other. And yeah, so what happened is in my search for answers, a friend told me, why don't you try Theta Healing? And at that time, I was like, I was ready to try anything. I was open to trying anything. And when I went and had my first Theta healing session, although I knew nothing about Theta healing, and I was a very mental person, it was like everything was the concrete, it was either black or white, there was no gray. And then Theta healing, you kind of, little by little, it kind of takes you to a meditative state where for the first time, I felt so connected to myself. I felt what love meant in terms of those vibrations in my body. I for the first time I was there with the vibrations of my body, and I felt like, oh, there's me. There is me, and what am I doing for this hidden Ruba that is suppressed, that is sacrificed, that is put aside? And it started like a love affair of meeting this Ruba that I was ignoring and taking care of her. So I was still in my very workaholic corporate life, but I started taking Theta healing courses, one course after the other over weekends. And this is how my spiritual journey started. And I started realizing it's not by coincidence where I am right now is not by coincidence. I led myself to where I am. Probably that was my survival, that there were lessons that I needed to learn. And the reality was, I was pouring all of my energy into things outside of my control. And the thing that was within my control, which is my self-love and my self-care, I had totally neglected. So this is where the shift started. The shift started, okay, I'm going to start taking care of me. I'm going to, and this is where the inner dialogue started of me spending time with myself, talking to myself with the language of love instead of holding the stick on myself, like the stick on the horse that go, 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 go. No, suddenly there was a much more loving voice. There was this inner dialogue with myself of compassion, of kindness. And that's where I realized, okay, I want to take care of me, and I want to take care of my eating because my eating is so much out of control. And I had gained so much weight. So 6 months into my Theta healing journey, I bumped into a friend who had lost a lot of weight. And I'm like, what have you done? And she's like, oh, I did this program and it's a food addiction support group and you do a workshop and you would like it. It's very emotional and mental. It doesn't just focus on what you're eating like a dietitian, but it starts with a workshop and then you have a WhatsApp group and then you have a weekly meeting. And I kind of liked the idea of the support community because I was part of this Theta healing community where we were all talking to ourselves without masks versus the corporate life where I've got everything under control, I'm very good, I'm the strong persona. And in the Theta healing community, we had all removed all of our masks and we were there in our naked truth. And then I
Yes.
was like, okay. And I was like, okay, there's one for food. And this is exactly what I need because food has been my lifelong struggle. And this is where my food addiction journey started. And the thing is, for a food addict, the hunger is not just a physical hunger. When we are overeating, every overeater knows that they're overeating beyond the capacity of their body. But they all identify with a very, very deep hunger. And you think this hunger is a hunger about food, but the hunger is much deeper. And actually, there's a mental obsession with food. And this is where the model of food addiction comes because it's very much like alcoholism, like drug addiction, like smoking addiction. There is a mental obsession and there is a craving. There's this constant yearning, I want to eat. There's this constant yearning to eat more. And it's not related. You think it's physical, you feel it in your stomach. But the thing is, This did not end up here by pure coincidence. It started from a very young age, and that's why I wrote my book, because I wanted the book to be an autobiography. I did not want the book to be like, this is what I did, and this is what these were are my recommendations. No, this is my life, and it's very important for each one of us to realize that everything starts with a trauma, with certain circumstances in childhood that lead us to where we are. And what happens typically for an overeater is very early on in life, there's a very intense pain. And this intense pain might not be conscious.
Okay.
The baby, way before the full development of the brain and the full understanding of life and how things work, realize if I go to food, if I eat certain things, it soothes my nervous system. It calms me down. So there's this unconscious association that food calms my nervous system down. And it's not any kind of food. It's sugar, it's flour, it's processed food. And this is where the addiction starts very early on in life.
Yeah. So where would the pain come from? Why would a little child be so like stimulated so that it falls into this trap of wanting to calm itself? Now, is it neglect? Like, what are the different scenarios that can happen when you're very, very young?
Okay, I'm going to talk about my story.
Yes.
And so in my case, I was born at the beginning of the Civil War. In the consciousness of my mother, I was the ideal baby. She had an ideal pregnancy. I was very quiet, and I was super easy as a baby to manage. That's the perspective of a 19-year-old woman who brought a baby in 1976, the year when the Civil War in Lebanon started. And by the time I was a month old, we had left Lebanon and moved to Ghana. So you can imagine moving countries at the beginning of a war with a 30-day-old baby.
Yeah.
So in the memory of my mom, I was the ideal child. But when I did all of my healing, I discovered something totally different. Actually, I've always had this feeling that I'm not welcome. Okay. I'm very, very sensitive to how people welcome me, and I have a very, very easy feeling of rejection. I can easily feel rejected. And this is exactly the thing. When there are intense circumstances at the end of a pregnancy and at the beginning of a childbirth, suppose parents are distracted, suppose there's death in the family, or the parents are not emotionally connected to themselves, or they're preoccupied with something else. There's someone in the family that is sick. There's a crisis in where they are, which can happen in all kinds of situations. The parents are preoccupied when a child is born. The child interprets this preoccupation as neglect. I am not wanted. I am not needed in this world. And this is a lot of pain. So what happens in my case is the child goes introverted. I need to erase myself as much as I want. That's why I was super calm.
I see.
A mother, super calm, low maintenance baby. But for the baby, if someone is trauma specific, it's like, why is this baby so calm?
Yeah.
Why is this baby so quiet?
Not asking for attention, for that love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because in the survival mechanism of the baby, there's a lot going on. I need to manage myself alone. I need to take care of myself. Because maybe if I do too much, nobody will be there to take care of me. And I will be rejected. Nobody will love me. There's no space for all of that. So just to say, and this is my personal trauma. And there could be a zillion scenarios of a zillion reasons. But this was my pain. But this pain was not on an intellectual level. I was not aware of it on even an emotional level, because I was numb. So what happens? What it creates is a sense it's not safe for me to feel. But what I will do is I will eat. I will soothe myself with food. And after that, when I was growing up in the 70s, in the case of my mom, she was very, very rigid. It's like there's a food schedule that you feed the baby. So if the baby is crying and it's not the time to feed the baby, she wouldn't hold me. So in this case, the baby loses connection to the natural rhythm of their eating. This intuitive eating, it gets broken. And plus, the baby loses trust. If I'm unwell, nobody cares about me. Nobody will come and carry me. Nobody will come and soothe me. And personally, in my family, there was never love and hugging and sharing. It was all about virtues and doing the right thing. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she poured her energy into taking care of us. But she didn't grow up in a household where there was hugging and love and caring and physical affection. As she evolved in her journey, she became more affectionate. But by then, I was a 10-year-old baby, a 10-year-old girl. It's like, stay away. I mean, you've never hugged me. Why do you want to hug me right now? It's like, So all of that explains why I resorted to food, because of emotional starvation. When there is no love, and then the child equates food with love, and I'm an overeater, so everybody else is allowed to eat except me. And it's like, why? You love everybody except me? You don't love me?
Yeah.
And this is how a child equates it. She's contrary. She doesn't love me. She doesn't care about me. She loves the others, and she gives them food abundantly. And me, in my case, no. Look, you're so fat, and you're overeating, and everybody's watching me as I'm overeating. So, of course, I'm going to start eating and hiding.
And so much shame accumulating.
Exactly. Yeah. So somehow we covered the physical hunger and the emotional hunger, but it leaves a third one, which is a spiritual hunger. And the spiritual hunger is much deeper and much wider. Feeling I'm not enough, feeling there's something missing in me and lacking with me, as if there's a hole. There's this thing I need to eat, I need to fill it. And it could be any addiction, it could be shopping, it could be anything where I am not good enough. And in my case, it's like, no matter what I ate and how much I ate, I always felt empty. And that's why my book is called Beyond the Emptiness, because there was this deep spiritual emptiness, this deep spiritual longing that in my case, I was trying to find fullness through food. And the journey is, this is the subtitle of my food, how I found fullness outside of food, because there are other ways of finding fullness in life beyond food and beyond the material side of life.
Yes.
Which is very prevalent in Dubai, because it's so much into consumerism and doing things and having like a bucket list of things I want to achieve and stuff, as if we achieve those things, we're going to find fullness. And fullness is simply not there. Fullness is presence in ourselves, is gratitude, is enjoying the little pleasures of life and appreciation for the things that don't have a monetary value.
Yeah, I resonate so much with your story. I feel like very close, because obviously I live in Dubai. I have experienced those things. I have experienced, it's been a beautiful experience to be here as an expat, but I do see the very materialistic side of it. The side where about women and putting themselves into work, I think that I do resonate with that story as well. And I think it's super interesting. When I said earlier about feeling like you're in control, I do think that I have some aspects of this in myself, because I am like the type of girl that, I don't know what you think about this, but I'm the type of girl that will be like, oh, I don't believe in diets. You know, I don't do diets. This is who I am. You know, I eat whatever I want. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I realized very recently that I'm not really taking care of myself. I'm just trying to put a facade of I do whatever I want. I don't follow the standards of everybody, but I'm not really appreciating myself and loving myself the way I should, because if I did, I would take better care of what I put in my body and what I like. Food is energy ultimately. We need it for energy. And like by in taking things that are wrong, I'm ultimately changing my energy. And I only realized this as I became more spiritual. Mm-hmm. I did have a couple of like questions. For example, one of the hardest things for me is I think a lot of people equate food with social aspect. So if I stop eating, I'm gonna miss out on most of the social things. And that's something that I definitely have. So what are your takes on this? And I think a lot of people will struggle, especially in this area, because I feel like Dubai is not very rich in recreational or things to do. So people do resort a lot in like, oh, let's see each other. Let's go for dinner. So what is the shift there? How do we need to separate a social aspect, or do we need to do that at all?
Yeah, I'm going to zoom out a bit.
Yes.
Because fear of missing out is a survival mechanism. If I don't tag along others, then I'll miss out on life. Then I'll feel empty. Then I'll feel alone, and so on and so forth. But what happens is a self-sacrifice. So in order to manage outside impressions, I sacrifice my inner self.
Yes.
And there comes a time where we want to invest in ourselves. And sometimes I would like to take the example of a mother with a newborn baby. A mother with a newborn baby cannot tag along and go around and follow everybody else. She has a baby that she needs to take care of. And this baby, if she doesn't take care of this baby in a certain way, her life will become really out of control. And so the thing is starting and centering in us and having the curiosity of discovering what are my inner needs.
Yeah.
What do I need? And many times, for an overeater and for someone who is on the go, you're totally clueless about what your needs are.
Yeah.
But the beauty of being in a place like Dubai, with so much abundance of spiritual modalities, of so many things, is we have access to many, many things and many modalities and many approaches to anything. And it's really a journey. So what I do in my work with overeaters and with my work with the... So what I do first is I help them fix the food, because I cannot discover my needs if I'm eating out all the time and doing things. So I need to fix my food. And when I fix my food, I start realizing, oh, I have cravings. And then those cravings, it's not my time to eat. So what is my need? And having this curiosity of investigating what are my emotions, what are my needs, and starting to address my needs and reorganizing my life in a way where I can better balance attending to my insides instead of sacrificing my insides for outside impressions.
Yeah.
And the invitation here is, how can I organize a social life that is not food-centered? How can I influence my social group to do non-food-related activities? So one thing, I mean, an easy tip that I do is I go out and I have sparkling water, or I have a coffee with friends. I rarely go out at night. That's my personal choice, because I'm not a night person. I'm more of a morning person. So I realize if I go out at night, it's too dangerous. I will overeat.
Yeah.
But if a person is a night person, they're okay. And at the same time, I'm an introvert person. So for me, going out, although it was also socializing, but I needed to overeat to compensate for the excessive noise and the excessive stimulation.
Oh,
so it's also understanding each one of us is unique. And it's really this journey of discovering what are my needs. And not being afraid to suggest activities that are not food related, like going bowling, Like going for a walk, even a walk in a mall. I know it's very hot right now. This is the only place where we can walk, or going to the beach, and doing activities in between meals. Even if the others are having their meal, many times I would eat at home something healthy and then go out. So that I don't have to expose myself to eating. Because what happens is, if I am hungry, the risk of me overeating is very high. And many people would say, it's a very common comment, oh, yeah, I'm so busy during the day, I don't eat, and then I end overeating at night. And my problem is night eating. And the invitation is okay. It's starting to meal prep and cooking over the weekend and having meals, healthy meals at home, so that I eat all day long. So by the time I come back home, I'm not going to be eating anymore because I'm full all day long. I've been eating in a healthy way because I have prepared my meals. If I don't have a healthy meal, of course, I'm going to go to what's accessible, what's easy. If I already have organized my food and I've done meal prep, I mean, on YouTube, I mean, and I'm sure on Instagram, you can look for a meal prep. There's a whole trend about meal prepping over the weekend and prepping meals and freezing them and defrosting them, or preparing your meals of the day the night before or the morning before you go to work and making sure. In my case, when I was working a corporate job in Dubai, I would prepare my breakfast, my lunch, and my dinner since I would stay late at work. And then by the time I come back home, I'm not eating anymore because I've eaten. And plus, when I leave work, I'm not in a hurry to get home to eat because I'm not hungry. I've already eaten. And this is the trick of beginning to organize a life that serves me, that attends to my insides. And instead of me sacrificing my inside self for outside impressions.
That's so, I think that message is actually very key. We do sacrifice ourselves to our health, our energy, everything to like fit into what society wants us to do because it's just more comfortable to other people. But I think those that advice is like super important. I think for me the social aspect is one of the most difficult ones. So in terms of like after you organize your food and you start noticing that you have certain cravings, like what is the best way to explore that? Like, do you advise people to journal or meditation? Like, what is the best way to explore feelings around food?
Here is the journey of connecting to our emotions. So it's a very long journey, and sometimes it's very hard to do it on your own. You really need to undertake a psycho-spiritual path, or to do food addiction counseling, or anything. I mean, any modality. There are a zillion of modalities to do, and the key is, how am I going to manage my emotions outside of food? I'm going to stop using food as a tranquilizer and begin a journey of knowing what those emotions are, knowing how those emotions get embodied inside of us. How do they manifest in our body? It's like starting to realize, and asking myself a question, how am I feeling right now? Am I angry? Am I happy? Am I afraid? Am I tired? It's asking basic questions. So in my case, it's having a check-in every day of a number of questions on emotions. You can Google and find like an emotion chart. You can print this emotion chart, and every single day when you wake up in the morning or before you go to bed, is looking at it and saying, okay, how did I feel today? Or if you're doing it in the morning, how did I feel yesterday? And noticing the emotions I felt from a drop-down list, and realizing, okay, I felt those emotions. But what happens usually, and so journaling about them is this option, looking at the drop-down list and journaling, okay, I felt those emotions, tack, 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 putting them. And then, I mean, okay, what am I going to do with those emotions? Many times, what happens we brush them off. It's like, delete.
Yeah.
Delete. We force them out. It's like, yeah. Outside. And the thing is, it doesn't really matter why we're feeling those emotions. What matters is this emotion is there. So rather than rationalizing and shaming myself and analyzing and throwing, that emotion is here.
That's the most important part, just the acknowledgement and
acknowledging
there. Yeah.
This emotion is here. And since this emotion is here, what am I going to do to take care of myself?
Yeah, that's so beautiful. That I feel super, super inspired and also like touched by all of this. I think food addiction is a reality for more people than what we think personally. I mean, some people, you don't have to be obese, but you can still have a food addiction or like emotional eating or like triggers or rely on food in unhealthy ways to calm anxiety and other issues. So this, this definitely like resonated with me, and I will absolutely continue investigating more and more about this. And Ruba, thank you so much for sharing your story. I want you to tell people where can they find you. Again, mention like the book. I'm going to put it on the description, obviously, of the podcast. Mm-hmm. But where can people find you if they want to follow this path in a more structured way? If they want to get a counselor, where can we find you? What's the best way?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram. So probably we can put a link to my Instagram food addiction account. And I also hold every Monday evening, 7 p.m., a Zoom food addiction support group that is free of charge and open to everyone who registered. And it's kind of a safe place for all overeaters to share their struggles during that week and to feel heard and listened by other fellow overeaters and realize they're not alone. There are other people that share the same struggle, that are going through the same journey, that feel misunderstood by society and their surrounding, and that are struggling every single day to manage their relationship with food. I'm here to support everyone. In my Instagram, there's about food. I do a lot of breath and incorporate a lot of breathing into the food journey as well, because I feel like breathing and meditation and mindfulness are extra important when it comes to a journey of finding fullness outside of food. I'm available on social media, and if anybody is interested in my book is available on Amazon here in the United Arab Emirates and everywhere else. And they can get a copy of it and buy it online. They can either order the hard copy of it, which is a soft cover or a hard cover, or download it with one click and have the ebook.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm definitely will continue investigating this. I thank you so much for contacting. I love this episode. Super relevant, and I think it's gonna be extremely relevant, super relevant for me, and extremely relevant for a lot of people. This is a reality that we live in, not just in Dubai, I think in general. So yes, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome.
Maybe we'll have you again to talk more about food addiction at some point. Thank you so much, Ruba.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Spiritual Chopo Podcast. If you like the content and you would like to show some love and appreciation, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Alternatively, you can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook at spiritualchillpill_podcast for updates on new episodes and more. Thank you so much for listening.